The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes, live here in the studio on this beautiful Thursday in December. And why am I so happy to be here? Well, not just to be here with you, as I always am, but, you know, it's funny because we have new, younger people working at the office, and they're still learning, they're still training, and sometimes they say, hey, is there something else that I need to be doing? Now, I'm not the person they report directly to, but occasionally they'll ask me a question too. So today I walked into the office and said, hey, girls, I have a very important job. Now, keep in mind, these ladies are 24, 25 years old, very much eager to do things to advance what their knowledge and their careers and be part of the team. So I'm like, hey, I have a very important job for you to do, and it needs to be done today, no later than tomorrow by noon. And they both said, okay, what is it? You need to wrap all my Christmas presents. So right before I came up to the station, I was unloading all of the presents, some for my son, most for my wife, into our Legacy Learning Center. And thankfully, we had a big roll of paper that we could use, wrapping paper, to wrap the gifts. So they'll all look the same, but at least they'll be wrapped better than I could have done them, more than likely. And I won't be down on my back. And I don't have any time. That's the other thing. So I was out wandering around last night, saw some people out last night. I was over at Goldcasters, did a nice little stint there. Went over to Bloomington Hardware. I went to Dick's Sporting Goods. Where else did I go? I was all around. I went all around. But anyway, I did what I needed to do. I've done some online shopping as well. And I feel pretty solid about the Christmas morning. We both agreed that, listen, we don't need a bunch of stuff. There's stuff that I got last year that's still in the box. I mean, I know it's embarrassing. And she said, well, you said you wanted that. Well, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But you know how it is, guys. When you get to a certain age and stage of life, and pretty much throughout the year, if there's something that you really want, you usually get it. And then when it comes Christmas time, it's the things you probably would never buy yourself. Like, for instance, this year, I asked her for a Traeger. I probably wouldn't have gone out and bought a Traeger. I'm a big Green Egg guy. Been a big Green Egg guy for quite some time. Haven't cooked a lot the last couple of years for some reason. But I thought, I'll get a Traeger. So I'm pretty sure I'm getting a Traeger because I went to Bloomington Hardware and actually picked it out. And I'm sure I'm getting a Traeger. I'm sure of it. I wanted it all put together, too. I didn't want to have to worry about putting it together. That's the problem with the Blackstone I had 2 years ago. It sat in the garage for a year because it needed to be put together, and I just never took the time. The other thing, a goofy present, but I think it's kind of cool. You see the birds and the Lime scooters around town and all that stuff. I'm like, what if I want a couple of those? So you can buy them, and they go like 20, 25 miles an hour. They fold up, and you can take them into the restaurant. So I asked for two of them, and I thought I'll keep them at the office, and the guys can ride them to lunch or whatever you want to do. And maybe when I go camping, I'll take them to the campsite. And I'm pretty sure I have those under the tree as well. Why? Because she doesn't hide stuff very well. And I saw it in the front bedroom last night, the room she told me not to go in, but I had to. There was something I needed in there, and she was in the shower, and I'm like, I'm just going to go in there. And I tried to be not like a 12-year-old kid, but it's hard, right? So I'm getting scooters. So if you see me or some of the guys in my office cruising around on a couple of scooters, beware. They don't know what they're doing. Last time we did that as a group, I wrecked into a bunch of bushes, so I'm not sure that'll happen again, but it's very well possible. So got a lot going on this week. Of course, it's Christmas Eve, I guess. So starting tomorrow night, we'll have a friend's Christmas. We'll have my mom's side over at my stepdad John's on Saturday evening. Sunday, we'll be at my dad's place for most of the day. We'll head to church. I think at 6 o'clock is our plan. And then Christmas Day, my wife's family will be wandering in sometime in the late afternoon. So we have some ham and all the stuff that you normally do, and then we'll be back at the office on Tuesday. So that's the plan. And then next week for the show, you guys know I normally have my dad, Jerry, come on that very last show of the year. You kind of keep it light. But remember, last year it was a recap of pretty much his entire life and career. And it's really to help relate to folks listening that are maybe struggling or going through the same thing that a late baby boomer goes through. And that is, when is it time to retire? Like, at what point do you say enough is enough? And last year we went through all of this with him. And at the end we concluded that, you know, when you know, you just know when it's time. And that's what he got to this year. He knew it was time to sort of back off a little bit. So he's starting 3 days a week, or he did go 3 days a week at the bank. And we'll just find out next week. We'll get more intel on the old man next week on Thursday's show. So look forward to that, and then we'll kick off the new year. Got some blockbuster guests lined up. The head of First Eagle Global, he is a Frenchman, a friend of Doug Hughes. They've went to tennis matches and things together. Guy manages billions and billions of dollars. Very, very good public speaker. We've had him in Bloomington before. If you want to know about gold, you're going to want to listen to the show, because they are like the number one owner as a mutual fund of gold of any fund out there. So we'll look forward to hearing Julian when we get coming back in 2024. All right, we're going to get Rod on in just a few minutes, but what we're going to be talking about, investor optimism has Fed officials uneasy. That was in the Wall Street Journal just this past Wednesday. And then this is something I want people to be aware of, if you're not already aware of it, that really the S&P 500 is not a good gauge of the market. Although we all see it, it's on the news every day, it's in everything we print off as well as far as benchmarking goes. But the Big Seven, the Magnificent Seven, dominate that particular indice. And I want to get into that because a lot of you own the C fund with your TSP, or you're in an index fund and they're trying to mirror the S&P 500. Well, is that really a safe place for you to be? I'm going to just get into the weeds on that just a little bit. And then luckily I have got this approved. I'm excited about it because you never know when it comes to compliance. But I was going to talk about how many banks have failed, and keep in mind what the FDIC limits are with a bank. I'm not going to get into how to maximize that. But then also, where can you go out and get a really good fixed rate these days that is good for more than 13 months or 18 months? Maybe I want it good for 3 years or 5 years. I'm going to give you some insight there where it's still guaranteed. It's still backed by a particular institution, and you're going to want to hang around for that one, because if you don't know anything about this, you're going to want to hang in there. So we've got a lot of that to do. We'll do some last-minute things in 2023 that you still can do before the clock runs out. So let's see what kind of time I have so far. So I am going to go ahead and give you a little info on what happened last week, and then we'll get Hot Rod to talk about this week and wrapping up the rest of this year. So last week was crazy, right? We've had 7 straight weeks in a row, positive market, and it's been fueled by this. Markets reacted positively last week to cooler inflation and the idea of potential rate cuts next year. That added to the gains of the market rally here into the year end. All the major indices were up like 2.5% to 3% practically. Stocks gathered all that momentum late last week after upbeat news from 2 key inflation reports, but the outcome of the Federal Open Market Committee meeting on Wednesday powered the week's advance. The combination of the Fed signaling, they literally said this, potentially 3 rate cuts in 2024, and then those dovish comments by Fed Chairman Powell led to a sharp drop in bond yields. We saw the 10-year go all the way down into like 340, I think it was. I'll get Rod's take on that. And we also saw a spike in stock prices. The Dow closed above 37,000. That's setting an all-time high. The S&P still has not reached that early 2022 all-time high, but it's getting pretty darn close. The rally continued the following day as a beneficiary of low rates, such as smaller cap stocks and real estate. Yes, we need that, right? We need that rate to roll over so that people, you know, will continue to buy and move and all that when it comes to real estate build. All that rallied. Solid retail sales numbers. This is a shock, because if you listened to me a month ago, I was predicting that people probably would not get their pocketbooks out because of, you know, worry. And then also the fact credit card balances are so high. But we were looking at that a little bit deeper, and I think Rod might talk about this when he comes on, that when you look at debt, the banks look at it as debt to income. So what is your payment to your income? typically you want it all to be under 40%. That is your house, your cars, you know, anything, student loans, whatever, my credit cards, all need to be 40% of your take home or less. That's how the banks view it. I'm not saying that's what you should do as an individual, but that's what they say. So they're really trying to downplay this high credit card debt, which is like $1 trillion now, by saying, yeah, but the payment to income is actually lower than it was a year ago, 2 years ago. And I'm like, well, two reasons for that. One, a lot of raises, right? We've had a lot of inflation. We've had some raises. So yes, debt to income ratios probably aren't that bad. But have you ever looked at your credit card? You have a $20,000 balance and they said, yeah, just send me $300 and we're good. Well, and then in the small print, it says, yeah, it'd take you 170 years to pay it all off or whatever it says. But that's what they're going after. I'm not buying it, but here's what happened. People are buying and the sales have been really, really good. So we had a really solid retail sales number and that's reflecting strong consumer and that supported the soft landing thesis that I have been on that side of the fence for a while. I thought we could slide this thing in. We had inflation. I mean, we were anxiously awaiting. I really wasn't anxiously awaiting, but I think the entire market was. A read on November inflation. It came in close to market expectations. It just had a slight increase over October, like 0.1%, not that material. And a year-over-year increase of 3.1. Now, remember, the Fed wants it to get to 2, but here's the cool thing. A 2.3% decline in energy costs helped offset a jump in food prices of 2.9, so that kind of crossed each other out. And we also have had housing prices start to slow because it had jumped like 6.5% from last November, but it only rose 0.4 from October. So we're getting there. The inflation news was better on wholesale prices. The producer price index was unchanged in November. So it's all pointing in the right direction. So I think the Fed is probably not going to be cutting anytime soon. I think they're going to hold these rates for a while, maybe into mid next year. And that's the issue that we're seeing, that the Fed is saying one thing, but the market's reacting another way. And that was in the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday. It said, investor optimism has Fed officials uneasy. And we saw a pullback on Wednesday, like of 1.5%. Here on Thursday, as I record the program, I can tell you exactly where it is here in just a second. We assumed it would probably, it's actually up a little bit, not much. But Rod and I talked about that yesterday, that we'll see tomorrow, Thursday, where things go. If this sell-off we had on Wednesday kind of powers into Thursday and Friday, we could see that happen into the end of the year, which has happened before. Or does it kind of hold off and we have some reaction in January as things sort of settle in? We'll get Hot Rod on the phone, get his opinion of that, and I'm sure more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Merry Christmas to everyone listening. You know, I mentioned on Wednesday, the Wall Street Journal front page, investor optimism has Fed officials uneasy. Fed Chairman Powell was asked in a recent gathering, what do you do for fun? He paused and grinned. He said, for me, you know, really fun is getting a really good inflation report. Then he laughed, and it was everyone else laughed in the room. I'm not sure if, Rod, you saw the video of that, but it's pretty funny. I'm sure he has fun doing other things as well. But I am the nerd that was sitting here reading the Wall Street Journal last night at 9:30 with a highlighter preparing for today's show. So I get it, pal. Powell is finally getting what he wanted, a meaningful decline in inflation. This is in the Wall Street Journal. But that is creating a familiar headache by making it harder for the Fed officials who want to keep their opinions open to dissuade investors that rate cuts are imminent, like coming for sure. After their policy meeting last week, Fed officials released projections of at least three rate cuts next year, and investors expect even faster and deeper cuts to result confusion when it comes to how quickly the Fed might cut and the central bank tries to bring inflation down without a painful recession. Rod, you and I talk about this literally daily. The Fed has said, yep, we could see three rate cuts next year. All of a sudden, investors, whoever they are saying, oh, no, we're thinking five rate cuts next year. We think rate cuts in March. We're kind of in the camp that, nah, they ain't going to happen. And we talked about that at length yesterday.
Yeah, most certainly. Well, and the thing is, what I have said is not definitively that it won't happen, but if it does happen in the spring, it's because the economy is really crashing hard. I just don't foresee that the Fed is going to go from the language that they've had at this point, the data points that we continue to get on a monthly basis, and suddenly in a few months, they're going to have a complete reversal and no longer fear inflation, but fear slowing the economy too much to the point that they feel they need to stimulate it. But I think a lot of this comes back to, we have so many players in the marketplace that I don't think believe the market can operate without the Fed giving it the ability to operate. And that's just not true. I mean, the Fed isn't there to drive stock prices up. The Fed is there to provide some stability within prices, hence the inflation. The other mandate for the Fed, which is there, I just have always thought it's kind of a useless mandate because they really don't have a lot of control over that, which is full employment. You know, the best that they can do when it comes to employment is set the table for demand to have opportunities to pursue those demand growth opportunities, which can lead to hiring and can lead to full employment. But there isn't anything that the Fed can truthfully do that force people to have jobs if the economy and the demand doesn't add up to that. So, yeah, I think that the market is setting itself up because I don't think the market is excited about a spring rate cut because of staving off a disaster within the economy. I think, once again, they're just falling back into this old adage that we got used to coming out of 2008, which is, low interest rates make it easier for growth companies to pursue growth opportunities. And there most certainly is truth to that. But legit growth companies also don't have to have low interest rate as the only way to find growth. I mean, if their products or services are in demand, guess what? Their earnings and their revenue are probably growing on top of that. And even at higher interest rates, they can still go out and get additional capital to pursue that additional growth. Can they pursue it as aggressively? Can they go after some other higher hanging fruit of growth that maybe they wouldn't when it costs the capital more versus capital costs less? Okay, yeah, there are some decisions that will be made because the cost of capital is high enough. It's like, we won't be that aggressive about pursuing this growth. But you don't have to have zero interest rates to have our economy and the market working in the right direction. Matter of fact, we had many a years, if not decades, in which, you know, federal funds rates bounced around between, 3% and 5%, and we had growth all the way throughout that, even in the higher rates and the lower rates. So, yeah, unfortunately, I do think the market is setting itself up for potential failure, because if the market gets what it thinks it's going to, I don't think it's really going to like the environment that we're in that is going to cause the Fed to make that decision to cut rates in the spring.
And we talked about productivity increasing, and that could be a driver of that. Last week we talked about that. Hey, the 10-year Treasury, which was sitting around 5, I think hit 391 last week. When I was putting my outline together, it was at 388. I went back into your office, I think early or late yesterday, and I think it was around 3.6-something. I don't remember exactly where it ended up, but that's a big, big move in the 10-year, huge move in the 10-year. And the good news is the 10-year is really the mark that mortgages are priced off of. So the national average of a 30-year mortgage was at 6.74%. That was from NerdWallet. History tells us that you're usually about 2 points over the 10-year, which technically would put us at about, 5.8% if we use those numbers. But the 10-year right now seems so volatile, mortgage rates are still stubbornly high. And when the risk is factored in to people maybe not being able to make their mortgage payments, which is still there, that makes rates a little bit higher as well. But that's all good news. I know, real estate nationally is somewhat stalled, and good for everybody would get rates down. I don't know where the 10-year rod ended yesterday, but I know it was pretty low when I was back in your office.
Yeah, it closed at 3.85 yesterday. Okay. It is up to 3.9 today. But yeah, to your point, Dave, the bond market is doing a little bit of what you don't need the Fed to do by decreasing rates, which is the rates came down on their own a little bit, which that's going to bring mortgage rates down a little bit. That's going to bring auto loans down a little bit. And it's the big ticket items that really have that powerful multiplier and ripple effect through the economy, because especially like in houses, it touches so many different sectors and subsectors and so many different industries when a house is purchased, whether it's a brand new home being built, obviously yep. touches a lot more areas, or it is just a old home being bought by a new family and then bringing in new furniture and new appliances and all of those things that go with that. So the Fed doesn't need to cut rates necessarily to have some stimulative action within the economy, and that's part of what we're getting. And I think a little bit of what you have right here is prices are still relatively high because the supply-demand imbalance within the housing market. You know, before things started to slow down due to rates going up, we had a massive, massive supply-demand imbalance in the housing market in which there was far more demand than supply. Now, that has corrected. It's not as out of whack as bad as it was, but you still have fairly low supply. Demand, obviously, has been up and down due to where the interest rates have fluctuated, but you've come back down, in which interest rates probably have come back off the high enough that some people are going, oh, hey, we stopped looking. Maybe we should start looking again because this interest rate seems a little more reasonable than maybe when they were 7.5% or approaching 8% on that mortgage. So that is going to be somewhat stimulative to the economy. Once again, the Fed didn't have to do anything for that to happen. Part of that is just the bond market looking out into the future and saying, hey, you know what? We don't see as much inflation pressure, and we also don't see as much growth. And that's typically what plays a big role in where interest rates go, in addition to the fact of what the Fed does. But we have to remember, what the Fed really controls is the shortest end of the curve. Now, typically, the middle and the longer end will tend to begin to follow suit, but it's not necessarily immediate, and probably a heavier factor on the 10-year and the longer rates really comes down to supply and demand, future expectations of inflation and economic growth. The Fed does play into that, but those other factors probably weigh on it a little bit more so than what the Fed does on that short end of the curve.
Yeah, I'm reading in the Wall Street Journal here. I think this was maybe Monday's report, but it said home buyers tiptoe into a tough market. The lowest mortgage rates since summer are starting to lure frustrated home shoppers back into the market. The problem is, as you just pointed out, that few homeowners who have locked in much lower rates appear ready to move. Brad, appreciate you taking the time as always. I will listen to you on Glass in the afternoon on Big Show Friday tomorrow. How about that?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm always excited about Big Show Friday because, of course, that means the weekend is about to begin. And, of course, this one's a long weekend, holiday weekend. We love that. Dave, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your show, and I will talk to you again when you get back down to the ranch.
Sounds like a plan. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, the Big Seven in the tech sector dominate the S&P 500. How does it work? And obviously, what does it mean to you? So we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about that. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, we want to give a shout out to Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full service auction service. Yeah, I've been telling Dirk for like the last year, we need to have behind the scenes at Kenny Bland Auctions. I think we need to do that. I'm going to see Dirk on Friday night for our Friendsmas. I'm going to bring that back up to him. They advertise, and I need to get him on, which who's going to be on? His son, Alex, and I'm going to talk about, like, who really wears the pants in the family, like a little interview like you hear with Betsy Green. But this is going to be off the cuff, really fun. What's your dad pitching this week? I can't wait to do it, and we're going to do it in 2024. So that'll be a fun thing for me to participate in. I've known Alex, obviously, since he was born. His mom and I were friends, or my dad and her dad were best friends in high school. In fact, her dad's name was Keith Houston, and we talked about this at his celebration of life, that my middle name is Keith, and there's not a coincidence that's the case. So anyway, good stuff, KennyBlandAuctions.com. I was actually at the bank the other day, and I was doing something, getting a cashier's check or something. But anyway, this lady next to me in the line says to the banker, do you know where you can get, like silver and gold coins? Do you guys have those here at the bank? And she said, no, we don't have them. Can you order them? She said, no, we don't really do that. Of course, I was sitting there trying not to butt in. My wife's always saying, like, don't butt in conversations, but if you can be helpful, butt in. So I'm like, hey, you might check out KennyBlandAuctions.com. They're always selling silver dollars and things like that. And she said, oh, well, that's a good idea. So hopefully she actually did that and maybe made out well. Okay, so S&P 500, that's all we ever hear, right? Well, here's the thing. The Magnificent Seven, and you know who they are. They're the big tech guys primarily, drive that indice. You know who they are. They jumped 75% in 2023. That's leaving the other 493 companies in the S&P 500 in their dust. Those other 493 companies have risen about 12% in the same time frame, while the indice as a whole is up around 23%. That Magnificent Seven has swelled to about 30% of the S&P 500. And you probably heard me say this, oh, about 12 of the companies, 12 companies represent like 50% of the S&P. These seven represent 30% of the S&P. So it's mind-blowing to think that an index that's supposed to represent such a broad group of companies doesn't. I would say buyer beware. So if you're riding this index, you're really riding those companies. And that good example is last year. They were down a ton last year. I mean, I don't remember they were down like 40, 50% last year. Well, that's why the S&P was down 18, because the other companies weren't down that much. So when I tell people, listen, you're in the S&P 500, you're probably in a pretty volatile spot because you have just a few companies driving this whole thing. I recently had a question from a federal employee. He's like, oh, I'm pretty safe because I'm in the C fund. The C fund. Well, the C fund is basically the S&P 500. And I'm like, you know what? You probably would be safer in a broad market fund, something that was more equal weighted. Sure, you can overweight sectors. I'm a big believer in that. Overweighting, you know, consumer staples when you're going into a recessionary environment like we've been in. You know, energy sometimes it's discretionary. You know, it could be anything you might want to tilt towards to take advantage of what's happening in the current market. But we're not big fans of overweighting in individual companies. Now, I will say this. You know, have you ever, and I'll admit this, have you ever met an overly diversified rich dude? The answer is probably no. Now, you've met some well-to-do diversified people, right? They're well-to-do, which they have, you know, good assets, and they're well-to-do, and they're pretty well diversified. And so I admit it. I have a friend that said he bought his lake house on one of these big companies back, and I know we did. So you can do it, and many of you have, and I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying beware that if you're jumping into something that's up 23% for the year, seven companies are up 75% of the year, and that's the primary reason it's up so high. Everyone else is up seven on average, the other 493 companies. I would just say buyer beware. I'm not saying anything more than that. Do I have an opinion? Yes. And my opinion is you probably need a little bit of both. Rod and I have always been an active and passive mindset where we have a passive piece to the portfolio and we have an active piece to the portfolio. Core satellite, some might call it. That's the key to me to understanding what you own. Now, long ago, people say, don't invest in things you don't understand. My guess is most people are invested in most things they don't understand. Because that's why you have to have professionals, people that do understand it, and they can help warn you when things need to be warned. And I just think for most people, you need to be warned that the S&P 500, yes, it's 500 stocks, but I think it's like actually 400, I think it's maybe 502, but anyway, that doesn't matter, that you don't own 500 equally weighted. You own, it's a cap-weighted index. The bigger you are, the bigger part you play in the direction of that index. So if you're okay with that, you're okay with it. But don't be shocked if in 2024, you know, we have a sell-off in those companies. Those companies are pretty far over their skis in some cases. Now, Rod said, we might be wrong. Through AI, through innovation, productivity, who knows that they might be able to increase their bottom line without lower interest rates, because I don't think we're going to see any major cuts anytime soon. But just understand what you own. And so if you're close to retirement and you're sitting in that C fund and you're with a federal employee, and I'm using them as an example because that's what came up this week, there is an option. It's called an in-service rollover. And TSP and most 401k plans, almost all of them, offer this. If you're over 59 and a half, now you think, why do they offer this? Because you need to get ready to get ready. If I'm 59, 60, and I plan to retire at 65, I may want to pull some of that money out and do something different, right? Build my soon bucket, right, with a laddered bond portfolio. Maybe change my diversity where I have more diversification in my equities and not just so top-heavy with an S&P 500-type fund. So they give you that option. That's why it's there, to help you get ready to get ready. Because a lot of the stuff that's in your 401Ks or 403Bs or the TSP, it's not really built. I mean, sure, there's a G fund in there you could slap it into, but there are other places to go that are better, and we're going to talk about that in the next segment, that I might blow your mind that it's even out there. And some people are going to just need educated on that. So when I talk about overly diversified people, or diversified people, not even overly diversified, but diversified people, they do have less stress. They do seem to be happier, not quite on edge. Highly concentrated people, which means they own a lot of something. They're a little edgier, a little more nervous something might go wrong. And that's what I've noticed in my almost 30 years of countless individual meetings with people, discussions around the tailgate or what it might be. I don't care if it's all your eggs are in your business, all of your eggs are in your real estate, all of your eggs are in one or two particular company, or most of them are in stock, one or two companies stock that you own. Those people are worried about what happens tomorrow. But those that are well-diversified, right, put your money in different places. You never know what disaster may come upon the land. That's make for a much happier life. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, CD rate specials all around. Everywhere you look, 13-month specials, 18-month specials. It is an all-skate. When it comes to CD specials. That's a reference to the roller skating days, right, when you were a kid. It's an all-skate. All right, when we come back, I'm going to talk about that, but where you can get longer-term fixed rates that are also in multi-year guarantee form. All right, we'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, if you follow us on Facebook, Marty the Moose has been hanging out with me here at the radio station as we record the program for your listening pleasure. So go to Facebook, look up Comprehensive Financial Consultants. Marty the Moose has been on quite a journey during the month of December. He shows up at people's desk. He shows up working the board at the radio station. He is working on marketing material with Jim. That's what he was doing yesterday. And today, like I said, he's at the radio station hanging out with me. So he was in Disney World last week as well. So Marty's been all over the place. Marty the Moose, check him out. He is a pretty cool character. All right, so CD specials, right? Everyone's so excited because this bank's offering that and this bank's offering this and that, whatever. No one's been this excited since the 90s. When I was newly in this business, like, oh my gosh, you know, every week they would shop around CDs or whatever. But everywhere you look, there's a 13-month CD special. It's 5%+. 18-month CD special, 5%+. Like I said before, it's like an all-skate. All of the banks are needing your moolah, and they're willing to pay you for it. But why just 13 months? Why just 18 months? Why not longer? Well, they don't want to be locked into paying you this for longer than that because they see what all of us see. We see rates heading down in the next, you know, year and a half to 2 years. So where else can you get 5%+? And have it locked in for a while. And when I say a while, I'm talking 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, like that. I would love to lock in 5.5%, 6% for 5 years or 6 years, wouldn't you? Well, you can, and it's with insurance companies. Insurance companies have things called fixed annuities, which is like a time deposit at a bank, but it's with an insurance company. Yes, it's an annuity, a fixed annuity. Now, just get off the annuity thought, whatever, it's good or bad or indifferent. It doesn't matter. It's called an annuity. An annuity is tax deferred. That's the only difference. It means if you leave the money in, you don't pay tax on it until you pull it out. So it's similar to a CD, except a CD, you pay the interest whether you take it out or not. A CD, an annuity, you don't. So it's called a multi-year guaranteed annuity, a MIGA. And there's no fee, right? And here's how it works. You find an insurance company that's really needing your money, and you give it to them. And it's locked in for 3 years, 5 years, seven, maybe even longer. So I pulled up what these current rates are. And the current rates are crazy good. Now, let me talk about ratings. Because when I look at ratings, you want to say, okay, you want an A-rated company? Sure. A B-rated company? Well, maybe. And that's how it works. So I went out and pulled a list of the top carriers and what they were paying. There's a B++ carrier that will give you 6% guaranteed for 3 years. Another one, 5.95% guaranteed for 5 years. In fact, when I go down and look at all the different rates, I mean, the top 10 are all in 3 years. Let me get my math out here real quick here. Look. So the fixed rates. So when I look at across the board, this was as of Wednesday, all B++ lower rated, mostly A and A- rated. Highest 3 year was 6. The lowest was 5.5 in the top 10. For 5 year fixed, the highest rate was 5.95. That was from an A-rated company, to 5.65. That was A and A- as well. All top 10 companies, right? That's who offering the best rate. Now, you might think, okay, let's. But you know, I don't know about this, because what if the insurance company goes down? Where, according to Goggle, as my brother Mark calls it, Google, he calls Google Goggle, which is kind of funny. According to Goggle, bank failures happen more often than you think. There has been 568 bank failures in the United States since January 1 of 2000. That's an average of almost 25 a year. Of course, we had the back-to-back collapse of Silicon Valley and Signature Bank earlier this year, followed by First Republic Bank in May. Those were kind of unique. The Fed stepped in and did things that they probably shouldn't do, which is bail people out. They're always bailing people out. But, you know, you have limits, $250,000, you know, per account, per person, blah, blah, blah. Well, insurance companies are the same way. But my question is, how many insurance companies have failed that offer these annuities in the last, you know, since 2000? Four. 568 banks, but four insurance companies. Why only four? Well, they're not out making bad loans, doing investment banking. They don't have to mark their bonds market to market. Which means if I own a bond paying 2% that's worth 60 cents on the dollar, doesn't mature for 10 years, and I put it to the side and say, that one's not for sale, then I get to market at what I paid for it. So they're just in a less risky environment. They are risk managers. That's what they do for a living. So they do it with their money as well. There's just different rules. Now, if you haven't considered buying one of these types of products, you should. How do you buy these? How much do they cost? They don't cost anything. There's no fee. But there's a surrender charge, like an early withdrawal penalty, but it's a little stiffer than that. So as an example, that 1 3-year I talked about, it's 3 years, right? And if you take it out early, you pay a 6% penalty, whether that's year one, year two, year three. So if you earn six and six, and then you took it all at the third year, you basically only earn six, because you're going to take that. You're not going to make the money that year, and they're going to take the money from last year. So it's sticky money. It's money that you put in with the intent of keeping it in there. Now, what about the guarantees? Sure, it's backed by the full credit of the insurance company, which we just showed you is a pretty good risk by itself. But what if they go under? So if when a bank goes under, what happens? Well, the sign changes, right? Friday, it goes under. On Monday, you have a new sign on the side of the bank. And usually there's a very little disruption. There can be a disruption, but usually it's not a major disruption. With insurance companies, here's how it works. Usually if they go bankrupt or they go into receivership, the Indiana Department of Insurance or Department of Insurance, whatever state, takes them over. Now, they also have guarantees. The Indiana Guarantee Association, it's called. And it will guarantee on annuities up to $250,000, just like the FDIC. Now, it's a little bit different because when a company goes under, they prioritize who they pay first. Like they're going to pay life insurance. They're going to pay annuities that are in payout form where you're getting a check every month. Those prioritize over you. So it's an inconvenience. It could be a major inconvenience, but there are additional backings. And if you want to look that up, go look it up. Indiana Guarantee Funds. Some insurance policies are protected by whole or part by these guaranteed funds, annuities up to 250, right? So if you have more money, guess what? I just said there's 10 companies that were paying 5.65 up to 5.95. Spread it out if you want to. So where do you buy these? Well, you buy them through an insurance person or investment person. Anyone that has an insurance license, a life or health license, can sell you one, put you in one. And that would be people like us. It would be a lot of times banks have people, insurance agents have them, and they write a policy for you. You put the money in, and you forget about it. And then 3 years later, 5 years later, it comes due. You don't have to. It's like a CD. It'll roll over again if you let it, but you want to be on top of it. And how do people get paid to do it? Well, they get a commission. And how much is that? Well, does it really matter? That's what I would tell you. If you're happy with six and they made whatever, who really cares? Well, I can tell you, most of them pay about 1.5% to 2.5% commission, depending on how long you own them. So if it's a 3 year, a 5 year, seven, we might pay a little bit more than that. And that's what they get paid. But you know what? It's honestly kind of a pain in the rear end to get licensed with the company. You have to be appointed with them. Then you have to usually take this stupid training, which is not very, it's just stupid. I mean, it is stupid. Three, you've got to fill out all the paperwork, which is cumbersome. You've got to sign it. You've got to fund it. It's a lot of work involved. So if you have $100,000 that goes in and a company makes $1,500 to do it, the person writing it who works for me might make $500, which is great. But, you know, they work for it. They have to communicate it. They have to do it. So don't get mad at people making money. It's the American way. It's a dream that we all live every single day. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, you know, fixed income bonds actually can deliver some of the strongest returns after CD rates peak. And I think CD rates are probably at the peak now. We'll be back to talk about that and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, real quick, because I am way over time. So when bond yields are high and rates go down, bonds go up. For every 1% move in interest rates, bonds will go up or down about 10 to 12%. So the 10-year trade was the best trade, and that usually peaks right after CD rates start to go down. So history tells us that when rates go down, bond values can jump up with coupon and increasing value by, you know, 10 to 20% sometimes. So it's a pretty good place to hang out. All right, I got to take a quick break. I'm so sorry. We're going to come back, give you a couple of last-minute things to think about. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, guys, Merry Christmas to everybody. I hope you have a fantastic one. We will be back here next week as well. Get those 529 plan contributions in. Make sure your HSAs are fully funded. If you have any Roth conversions, you're probably too late. That ship probably has sailed. You still have time to do some lost harvesting on those bond funds before the end of the year. So just a lot of few little bitty things you should have already probably done. But if you haven't, you still have some time. So once again, Merry Christmas, everyone. I hope you have a good one. When we come back, you're going to hear the disclosures. So I'll talk to you next Thursday when my dad, Jerry, will be in the house and talking. We'll be talking about retirement, right, with a guy that's somewhat getting there, somewhat retired, not fully retired, but getting there. And we'll nudge him of what's next. He's not going to retire. He's going to continue to do something. And he'll tell you what's happening in his world and maybe encourage you to do some of the things, same things he's doing, to not just simply fill his time, but have fulfillment of time. All right, guys. Blessings to everyone. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.